All right, welcome back, everybody. Hour number two of Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah is upon us. Thank you for staying with us. And if you're coming in for the first time, we're glad you're here. This is Tony Beam. I'm the Director of Church and Community Engagement for the Tim Brazier Campus of North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference and where we are equipping transformational leaders for the church and society. And please get in touch with us. We got room for you coming up in summer school and in the fall semester. And we're looking forward to getting started back this fall. All right. My co-host is Hannah Miller.
It's me. Going on so long me. Over there. People are
I know, I know. Yes. I ran the music out.
Hello.
Again. Chris asked me if I thought that the Confederate flag is a racist symbol.
Because that's for sure going to tell you whether you are racist or not.
Here's the deal. This is what I wrote. I would personally never fly a Confederate flag. I don't think as a symbol it is inherently racist, but has been made a racist symbol by people who use it for that purpose. I fully supported Governor Beasley's decision to remove the Confederate flag from the Capitol Dome in Columbia, and I believe the best place for it is in a museum dedicated to the Civil War. I mean, I look, there's no question that African Americans see that symbol as a symbol of a country that wanted to keep them in chains. And I understand that. I get the right. I don't. What I disagree with is that you automatically ascribe racism to everybody who has a Confederate flag. And I don't think that's true. I think for a lot of people, the Confederate flag represents something other than slavery and racism.
Yeah. I grew up in a very Southern rodeo horse culture.
Right.
And that it didn't mean that. To those
no,
people.
No, no, no. I mean,
everybody and their brother had a Confederate flag belt buckle, and they had it on their belts or just what.
Right.
And for them, it just meant Southern culture. That's all it meant to them.
And of course, people say, "Well, Southern culture is racist." Mm-hmm. Well, no,
they're just proud to be Southern.
Exactly.
It
had nothing to do with racism. So that's why I don't think we need to be flying Confederate flags as a manner as a part of like on the Capitol Dome in Columbia. Mm-hmm. For real. I mean, we need the United States flag and the South Carolina flag, which is, I think, what's up there now. And then I thought, well, moving it to the Confederate monument on the grounds of the State House, that kind of makes sense because the Confederate monument is memorial to the Confederate Civil War, and South Carolina was part of the Confederacy. So put the But then when, you know, the whole thing, the whole shooting went down in Charleston in the church. And I mean, and this guy who shot these eight black people in a church for racist reasons, he was all about Confederate
Nicholas
flag
Cruz,
and displayed it all.
Yeah.
Of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, let's put it in the museum. And because it's part of history and it doesn't need to be in a place where African Americans are insulted by it every day. We're supposed to be concerned. I personally feel like I want to be concerned about the concerns of my African American brothers and sisters. When they say this is racist and this is how it makes me feel, I want to take that seriously. I mean, if there's a reason to take it seriously, and certainly the Confederate flag is something to be taken seriously in that regard. All right, Mike's on the phone. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, do you think the media reports, they don't get their information and they report too fast?
I think there's times when the press goes to press without all of the pertinent details that they should have.
And they act like they have what they're sharing is 100%,
Look at what happened with, my memory is so bad, but the Catholic group, boys from Kentucky.
Covington.
Covington Catholic. Mm-hmm. Those guys, they were vilified. It was terrible. And when we come to find the end of that story, it had nothing to do with trying to be disrespectful or racist or, I mean, it wasn't, the Covington Catholic boys were not doing anything wrong. Mm-hmm. And lawsuits now have borne that out, and they've actually been awarded money from the press who jumped to the wrong conclusion. And I think when the press does that, they should be held accountable.
Yeah, I know sometimes if I'm watching news or something and they report something, sometimes I fall into that. I'm like, oh man, that happened, this happened, and then come and find out a couple weeks later, this story is totally different.
Right.
You when you mentioned racism, if a black man murder a white man, is that a racist crime too?
It may or may not be. If an African American man, if a black man kills a white man because he hates white people, and he decides that I'm going to go out and kill a white person because they're white, and I don't want white people to be able to live, then that is by definition a racist crime, because the motivating factor is the race of the victim. So that's pretty clear.
Yeah, but even if it's a racist crime, the crime is still murder, right? I mean, it's still
I get it. Murder. You're talking about when they start adding on these different charges because of the motivation of the person who does the crime. And that's a debatable point, because then you get into, you know, okay, we can say, well, this was obviously a racist crime because of the statements of the perpetrator. He was acting in a way that is racist. But then how far do you go with that? I mean, do you start reading people's minds? Do you say, well, I read a Facebook post that this guy put up 10 years ago that indicates that at one time he didn't think too highly of homosexuals. And so now he's killed someone who is a homosexual. So is that a hate crime because he said something 10 years ago that was derogatory toward homosexuals? I mean, that's the kind of thing that bothers me. It doesn't bother me. I mean, for something, if a black man is robbing a white man, and in the process of that, the black man kills the white man because he doesn't hand his wallet over quick enough, that's not a racist incident. It could have been anybody. But if a black man goes out and says, I'm going to go kill a white man today because I hate whites, that's racism. To me, it's pretty clear. We muddy. That's what I said earlier, Mike. In America, all of a sudden, we've taken the prism of racism and we apply it to everything.
To every interaction.
Every interaction. This Amy Cooper's a racist. Why? Because she called him an African-American man. So anyway, Mike, thanks for the call. Here's Amy Klobuchar. Go back to George Floyd for a second. Amy Klobuchar. My statement on the officer-involved death in Minneapolis. We heard his repeated calls for help. We did. We heard him say over and over again that he could not breathe. Absolutely true. And now we've seen yet another horrifying, gut-wrenching instance of an African-American man dying. Every single person in every single community in this country deserves to feel safe. True. As the mayor of Minneapolis noted, the tragic loss of life calls for immediate action. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the four officers have been fired. Charges may be filed. An investigation needs to precede any charges that are going to be filed, because that's what you do. When something happens, you don't just look at a video and say, okay, done, we're done here. Take these guys out back of the courthouse and dispose. No, we don't do that. We investigate. We look at what happened. What happened before this, we take that in consideration. This officer, was he being overzealous? Was he mad? I mean, Hannah and I were talking about this off the air, and I think the guy, this is supposition. I'm about to enter into pure, unadulterated supposition, because I have no other way to talk about this.
But everybody else is doing it, so, you know.
Just dive in the deep end, okay? So here's, but to me, it seems to me that when you look at that video, that police officer was ticked,
yep,
that this guy was resisting him, and
he
was tired of
time,
it.
And he said, I'm going to show you a little bit. I'm going to sit here for a little bit, let you feel what that's like.
Exactly. That's he subdued him, and then when they put the cuffs on him, he should have been let up.
Yep.
Let's put him in the car now. We've got him under arrest. Nah, you know what? I'm going to keep my knee on his neck for a little bit longer because I'm tired of this. Maybe the next perpetrator will think twice about it. I don't know that was going through, but I could kind of see that. For whatever reason, in my mind, that was excessive force. He had no reason to keep that man down when he was handcuffed. And if his death is a result of that, then they deserve to be charged. And they certainly deserve to be fired, because they should never have let that go on as long as they did. Never.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's kind of – but the reason I said – Amy Klobuchar identifies him as an African-American man. He didn't use his name. He used – she identifies him – now
– and how come she's not a racist?
How come she's not a racist and Amy Cooper's a racist? I'm beginning to get that a little bit better. Because I get it. Amy Cooper's context was that she was in a park confronted by an African-American man, and we're supposing that her motive in calling him that was to intimidate him and to either maybe she believed that the police was going to respond faster. That's the supposition that we're putting there. Amy Klobuchar identifies George Floyd as an African American. There's obviously not any motivation there.
The context is different in which they're being said.
Yeah, there's not mm-hmm. What is the motivating factor here? She's identifying as an African American because a lot of people are concerned that African Americans, too many, are dying at the hands of police officers. I don't want anybody to die at the hands of a police officer unless the police officer's life is in danger. And to me, that's the standard. Somebody's trying to take your life as an officer of the law, you have the right to defend yourself against a lawbreaker if they're trying to take your life. In this case, that obviously wasn't what was going on here. And so these people are going to be held accountable to some degree.
I saw the numbers yesterday. I looked up between what is the police altercations typically leading when somebody dies and they have an altercation with a police officer. And I saw the numbers yesterday, and I wish I could have done all of the math because I saw it late last night. But there's twice as many negative altercations of a white person with the police than there are African-Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, you then have to look at demographically. There's a lot more whites than there are African-Americans in the United States. But I think when I just preliminary looked at those, and it's almost exactly 50%, 50% of interactions of African-Americans with police officers than there is with the Caucasians. So, but even just looking at that and having a base knowledge, you can see, okay, that's probably a little bit higher of interactions when you're talking about percentages of the percentage of population and demographics of the United States, and you're looking at all that. But it's still, the numbers are still.
Right. Here's the problem, though. Fair enough. 50% of altercations with, let's make them, I'm making the numbers up because we don't have them in front of us. I'm going to make this up for an
illustration. I can find them.
50% of all of violent altercations like this happen with Caucasians. And then you've got Hispanics and, I guess, Asians and African-Americans. Well, here's the thing. People are going to say, but the percentage of African-Americans in America is only at 12 to 14%. So how can it be that they're 12 to 14%, but they're making up such a significantly higher number of altercations with police? That's what makes it. You have to look at the percentage based on
the population of the
demographics.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But here's the next part of that story. Then you have to extrapolate that out and ask the question. If you're talking about rural Kansas, then, the population there is going to be way weighted in as Caucasian.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking about an inner city
Atlanta,
project
Georgia.
In Atlanta or Philadelphia, then you're going to have a majority there is going to be African American. Mm-hmm. If you're patrolling in that area, then you shouldn't be comparing the number of African Americans and the number of Caucasians total. You should be comparing the number of African Americans and Caucasians in the area where the patrolling took place, and then compare that to the number of crimes. Mm-hmm. If the crime rate in a certain area is predominantly African American, then yes. Of course you're going to have, if more crime is being committed, you're going to have more interaction between police officers and African Americans for that reason. Not because they're racist, but because it just so happens this is a majority African American area. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the majority of crimes committed in a majority African American area are committed by African Americans. Mm-hmm. And by the way, they're being committed against other African Americans. So people don't take that kind of thing into consideration. They just say, well, police are racist.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. Extrapolate all of that out to exactly what you just said. And was it Andrew Cuomo who came under fire in New York for doing this exact thing during kind of right before COVID-19? Yep. They had an area that was predominantly African American, and everybody said he was racist because a bunch of African Americans were being arrested in that area. But it was just because that was the demographic of the area.
Right.
But he said, "Oh, everybody's right," and so they were pulling police officers out of that area, and it
now,
was just like that leaves that's the people who were innocent in that and vulnerable in that area.
No protection.
They have no protection.
Now what's and to me, is that racist? When you decide that African Americans don't deserve to be protected the way you're going to protect people in a majority white neighborhood? What? I mean, to me, that's a lot more racist of a statement than the other way. But I want to go back to the story about George Floyd in Minneapolis, because there's a line in the story about the protest that turned violent that I want to deal with here for a second. That's in the building. It's going to be sprayed. Protesters threw water and milk bottles at the officers shouting pigs and how could you? It's real ugly. Okay, here it is. Here's the statement that I wanted to get to. It's real ugly. The police have to understand that this is the climate they have created. This is the climate they created, another protester said. Now, a lot of people agree with that, that the police created the climate, that the protesters, in other words, the violent response of the protesters. This, to me, is...
Are they saying that because the police showed up in, like, SWAT gear?
Well, no.
Are they
saying it because of the incident that started
Yeah. That started it all.
The protesters later moved toward the Minneapolis Police Department's 3rd Precinct, where crowds swelled. People were seen throwing rocks at the building, as well as at police cruisers, with one being sprayed with paint. Now, you can't start chucking rocks at police officers and at police headquarters with there not being some kind of problem. I mean, they're going to respond. That's going to when you're peacefully protesting, you can hold signs, you can chant, you can call the police pigs. You've got a First Amendment right to say that about police officers. I find it horrific, but you can do it. But you can't start chucking rocks and, you know, spray painting and breaking windows. And there's videos of that taking place. And that's when the police started responding. So here's the argument to me. I mean, I've got two grandsons that are local. And one of them's 5 and the other one's 3, or he just turned 6. Anyway, I lose track. Yeah, they're in the age category. But the minute one of them, you know, does something, the other one's going to say, well, he made me do it. He made me. He did this because, I mean, I did this because of what he did. And that to me sounds like...
And what's the first thing as a parent that you do? I mean,
What do you say?
Every couple of days with my kids. I've got a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. And, you know, she hit me. Well, it's because she pulled my hair. You know, and it's just back. Yeah. And I say, well, wait a minute. Just because she, you know, and it usually it falls to the older child because she's a little bit more mature. But in this situation, you've got everybody about the same age. But anyway, you would still, I would look at them and say, look, just because one person does something doesn't mean we retaliate. In anger, we don't hit, we don't smack, you know, we don't raise our hand to another human being.
Yeah, well,
really, unless we are, you know, we go into defending ourselves and violent stranger, whatever. But when you're looking at your child, though, in this situation, you still have to say, look, and sometimes in this situation, too, they're saying, well, it's the rules that made me did it, really.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Look, when you've got protesters, like I said, carry your signs, write whatever you want on them. Yell. Be
and
boisterous.
And I told them, come tell
march.
The appropriate authority. I am the appropriate authority.
Exactly.
As soon as she touches you, you need to come and tell mommy and I will handle it.
Yeah, don't,
and
but
that's
don't.
And that's really what a protest is when it's done right. There's
right.
when you're standing in the street and you're holding your sign, you're telling the appropriate authorities.
Do
something about this.
You take control. This is your
that's
job.
Right.
And I'm all for that, of course. But for this guy to say, well, it's the police fault. They created the environment. No, that doesn't give you an excuse to start chucking rocks.
Mm-mm.
You created the protesters. Created the environment when it went from signs and chants and whatever else to rocks and glass breaking and spray paint. I mean, those things made the environment where the police had to step in and use rubber bullets and tear gas to break up an angry mob. So, anyway, all right, Wayne's on the phone. He says he wants to talk about the Confederate flag.
Yes, last year I had the great pleasure of attending the Confesta Confederata, or Confederate Festival, that is held in the Confederate Cemetery near Santa Barbara in the Brazilian state of São Paulo. These are the descendants of the many thousands of Americans that emigrated to Brazil after the Civil War. And people of all races attend this Confederate Festival. I talked to a black lady there who spoke excellent English and asked her how she would like it, and she says, I'm enjoying it. and took a photo of some of the men and young boys in their Confederate gray uniforms that looked so stunning. And in Brazil, the term brown is used to describe anybody of mixed race. The Portuguese word is pardo. And so some of the soldiers were pardo. There were Japanese people there because Brazil took in a lot of Japanese immigrants in the early 1900s. Brazil's probably the most non-racial society on the face of the earth. And, of course, you had the 13 flags of the Confederate States, the Confederate flag, along with a huge explanation of what it meant in both Portuguese and English, the Brazilian and American flags all flying there for this great festival that's been held for over 30 years. I first learned about it when Jimmy Carter was governor of Georgia, and he and Ms. Carter went down there in the early 1970s because one of her great uncles had been one of the immigrants. It's not taught in schools.
Okay. Thanks, Wayne. I appreciate the call. That has absolutely zero to do with any discussion about the meaning of the Confederate flag in the United States. If people who went to Brazil and after the Civil War because they didn't want to be part of the Union and they formed a society and they think that the Confederate flag is a good thing and it ought to be extolled, then that has nothing to do with the context of the fact that the Confederate flag in this country represented a country that wanted to form to defend the right to keep their slaves and to keep black people enslaved. I mean, there were a lot of other reasons that the Civil War was fought. I get that. Slavery was one of the reasons. But you know what? When you talk about every time I get in these conversations with people and they'll say, well, it was about states' rights. Every state ought to have the right to secede. What right was the state trying to defend? It is about states' rights. I believe in states' rights. That's why I think President Trump can't come and tell a governor that you've got to allow churches to open. Now, because I believe supposed to be the, you know, we started out with President Trump agreeing that the governors had to make these decisions, that the federal government shouldn't be overriding governors to tell them how to respond to the pandemic. And that's what the media and that's what the left wanted. They wanted the president to shut the entire country down and instruct governors to do what the federal government said, that this should be a federal decision. Trump said, no, not under federalism. This is a state-by-state decision, and that's the way it's going to stay. Well, then you can't come back and say, well, I'm going to override all the governors and tell them what to do. I mean, it doesn't work that way. You know, when it comes to the Civil War, I understand how the Confederate flag can be seen as a racist symbol because some of the rights that were being defended in the Civil War, and one of the main rights was the right for states to stay as a slave state, that the institution of slavery would be preserved. The South wanted that. They wanted other things too. And there's a legitimate discussion to be made about whether or not, under our Constitution, a state can secede. The fact that I think that with the Civil War brought the country back together, I think a lot of people think we'd be better off if we had a Southern States of America and a Northern, or whatever you want to call it, the Union and the Confederacy. I personally think that a United States of America is better in the long run. But that's a different kind of debate. And I just don't think that the descendants of Confederate of war veterans or whatever living in Brazil, having a festival that Jimmy Carter went to, has anything to do with whether the Confederate flag in the context of United States history is a racist symbol. Time for celebrity birthdays. So if you're having a birthday today, we say this to you.
Happy birthday!
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you share a celebrity birthday because you are a celebrity on your birthday with Cornelius Vanderbilt, who was born in 1794, one of the industrialists that helped build America. Wild Bill Hickok tried to kill as many people as he could in America. He was born in 1837. he was actually a lawman and a gunfighter and an actor, and he did a lot of stuff. Vincent Price was born in 1911, Hubert Humphrey in 1911, Christopher Lee was born in 1922, Henry Kissinger is 97 today, Leanne Merriweather is 85, Louis Gossett Jr. is 84, and Jeff Bagwell is 52. So that's our celebrity birthday.
It's Blippi's birthday today, too, for all my fellow millennial parents.
Who? Blippi.
Blippi.
Blippi?
We all have a love-hate relationship with Blippi.
And who is... I have never
like
heard
a sandwich.
Of Blippi. I hadn't even heard
Blippi
of
Blippi is a character that does a kids' television... It's a YouTube show,
okay.
Like you subscribe to it.
Okay.
And he is really, really amazing at doing just different... explaining what things are. It's a kind of an informational, educational show. But dude, he uses the most annoying voice you've ever heard. And so it just nullifies the educational aspect
of
the show, any benefit of it.
Is it kind of like listening to, what was the guy they locked him
Pee-wee
up?
Pee Wee Herman?
Yeah, Pee Wee Herman. I just couldn't stand.
He kind of does this high pitch, and he dresses really crazy, and I get the his bright orange suspenders, and I mean you can see his picture right here. There he is, boom, and he wears like bright orange pants like that are about 3 inches too short. But you know it's a kids show. Yeah, I expect it. But yeah, we all kind of like.
Well, see, before we found out that Pee Wee Herman was not a very good guy, a lot of kids watched Pee Wee Herman's Playhouse. Wasn't
Pee-wee's
that the name
Playhouse,
of it?
Playhouse, and then his movie, Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah. Because my son ran around. He was of that age, talking about because he was fascinated that somebody married fruit salad. I mean, got married to fruit salad because I love fruit salad, and then they married fruit salad, and so that just really had a big impression on Adam. He talked about that forever. Somebody got married to fruit salad. Thankfully, he married a really fine young woman who is now the mother of four of my grandchildren and is a tutor for USC students and UCLA students in computer science. Yeah, it's a great gig out in California. She should do the whole thing from her house. All right. Anyway. Let me move over here to, is it possible, I guess the question we're going to ask now, is it even possible to be objective in any way about President Trump and some of the stuff he does? I mean, can we just get honest for a second and say the president does some really good stuff, and nobody is a bigger fan of the really good stuff that he does than me, but he does some really dumb stuff. And when I start talking about the dumb stuff he does, people get so mad at me because I'm pointing out that this is just dumb. And if he wants to get reelected, he really needs to knock this kind of stuff off. And what I'm talking about is that White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany.
McEnany, I think is how it's said. We had this discussion yesterday.
McEnany. M-C, capital E-N-A-N-Y.
McEnany?
McEnany, okay.
McEnany.
Kayleigh McEnany. Parried questions Tuesday about President Trump's tweets regarding the 2001 death of an intern working for Congressman-turned-MSNBC host Joe Scarborough, suggesting reporters find answers in a clip in which Scarborough seemed to make light of the matter. Now, okay, yes, Scarborough did an interview where he made it. He did it with Don Imus, where Imus was, you know, you're talking about a provocateur. I mean, Imus threw out a comment saying that something about the intern and the fact that Scarborough killed the intern, and Scarborough laughed about it. Not a very good, because the intern supposedly had some kind of medical condition. They suffered a heart attack, fell, hit their head on a desk, and was killed. So the rumors have been going around, conspiracy theories, for years. This was investigated. It was that Joe Scarborough killed this intern. I don't even know enough to be able to tell you why this happened. But now all of a sudden, President Trump is saying that, you know, they ought to open a cold case. Here's the tweet he put out. He said, "The opening of a cold case against psycho Joe Scarborough was not a Donald Trump original thought. This has been going on for years, long before I joined the chorus. In 2016, when Joe and his wacky future ex-wife Mika would endlessly interview me, I would always be thinking about whether or not Joe could have done such a horrible thing. Maybe or maybe not. But I find Joe to be a total nut job, and I knew him well, far better than most. So many unanswered and obvious questions, but I won't bring them up now. Law enforcement eventually will. When will they open a cold case on the psycho Joe Scarborough matter in Florida? Did he get away with murder? Some people think so. Why did he leave Congress so quietly and quickly? Isn't it obvious? What's happening now? A total nut job. Comcast should open a long-overdue Florida cold case against psycho Joe Scarborough. I know him and Crazy Mika. Well, they used to be, and I used them beautifully in the last election, dumped them nicely, and will state on the record that he is nuts besides bad ratings."
Is this one of those things that he said at like 2 o'clock in the morning where, you know, he's just like sitting up there in the White House in his bed and his mind just starts going and it gets off the rails and he's like, I'm going to tweet about this?
One was at 6:38 a.m. One was at 6:54. One was at 9:19 a.m. when he should have had his coffee by then,
yeah,
which was the first one. Look, and Scarborough's, he's terrible about it, okay? But why? I just want to know, why are you spending time on you're the president of the United States and you're tweeting that Joe Scarborough is a murderer and you're surprised that your press secretary is having to answer questions about that? Do you think that the press, who hate your guts, are going to come out and try to ask questions about why you're accusing Joe Scarborough of being a murderer when that's a years-old conspiracy theory that's never had any legs to start with? Nobody, I mean, even if, let's just say that, you know, I can hear all the Trump people now going, we just wait until they prove that Joe Scarborough killed that intern. Look, even if that's true, why is Donald Trump doing this now? I mean, he's got... There are plenty of initiatives, plenty of good things. The president needs to be thinking, people are going to the polls in November. They're going to vote for either me or Joe Biden. And I'm calling Joe Scarborough a psycho and bragging about how I used him and Mika to help me. And I played them like a fiddle and then dumped them after I got... Is that the kind of stuff that's going to cause people to go, wow, this is a guy that I want to go out and lead the country? I mean, other than the people that have already decided that this is what they want this. I just don't, please don't, Mr. President, please. Mm-hmm. I want you to get reelected, and I don't think this is helping you.
Well, again, it just, whoever's dumb last loses. And between him and Joe Biden. It's a real race now.
Did you, by the way, I'm glad you mentioned Joe Biden. I'm not going to be able to find
it. Oh, the interview?
Boiled a baby.
What?
Okay, wait a minute. Boil a baby and eat it.
What?
Let me. Yeah.
Journalist. No.
I'm telling you, a journalist said. Here it is. Liberal columnist. Liberal magazine columnist would vote for Biden even if he boiled babies and ate them. A columnist for The Nation shrugged off sexual allegations against Joe Biden in a published article Wednesday, saying the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee would get her vote even if he boiled babies and ate them. Katha Pollitt said Biden isn't her first choice to occupy the White House, but that ousting President Trump is the most important thing.
Well, it's just like the New York Times article that was written a couple of weeks ago where she's like, hey, look, Tara Reid, I actually believe her, but doesn't change the fact that I'm going to get out there and vote for Joe Biden because I hate Trump.
Well, but now, if you remember that Trump said that his supporters would vote for him even if he killed somebody in Times Square.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if I killed somebody in Times Square. And the media went ballistic that he would say something like that. So what about this? What about this woman who says, if Biden boiled babies and ate them? Look, killing anybody and anything is horrendous, but I'm going to give the victory to this woman for being the grossest. Because, yeah, killing somebody in Times Square, that'd be a horrible thing. But boiling babies and eating them, that's over the top even for that. Okay? and yet, no media scrutiny. Nobody's going, oh, my gosh. Oh.
Look at Biden supporters. They're all like this.
They're all like that.
They're all crazy.
That's who these
like
Biden
that.
Supporters are. No. And no, not when it's a Democrat. Not when it's Joe Biden. And that's what drives
but
me.
But going back
crazy.
To your main point, though, why bring this up now?
Why?
It's not winning. Look, remember, this is it's instead of being like whoever's dumb last loses, it should be winning arguments to convince people
and
to come to your
that.
Side.
He's got them
he doesn't
all.
Do, and he does. He
He's
has got good things to stand on now. That was the argument before. He has no record by which we could trust him to actually stand on and do the things he says he's going to do. Now he has a record. It's a pretty good one, and that's what he needs to be
but
getting
see,
out in front
of. That's
people.
What bothers me about the way that he does the media, because he's mad at him. He pushes these issues. I mean, yesterday he was doing a press conference. A great thing. They've actually come up with an initiative that's going to cause seniors to be able to get who are on insulin. I think not just seniors,
like,
but I think anybody.
$35.
$35 for insulin. And and it's going to make a tremendous difference in their life for what they have to pay for this. It's going to
Was like $600.
Yes.
It was insane.
$35. And yet it turned into a reporter asked a stupid question. Some kind of accusatory question. And then the president started calling on all these experts to defend him. And to me, you just let stupid stuff like that go by and you tout what you got up there to say, which is, look what we're doing here. And this is a major breakthrough. Everybody, Democrat, Republican, Independent, Communist, Atheist, Democrat, Socialist, believer, everybody should be happy that we've been able to come up with a way to keep people from having to empty their savings accounts to stay alive. And that should have been the point.
Yep,
just hammer it, instead of getting into this nasty back and forth, blah, 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 that people listen to about 5 minutes of, and then they turn it off because they're disgusted. And that doesn't help get him elected. And I want him to be elected. Did you see where Twitter is now putting these labels on President Trump's tweets?
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well,
making a decision
about
whether they're true or not.
Yeah, they're fact-checking him.
Okay. This is...
And it's like CNN and Washington.
And the Washington Post that they're using as fact-checkers.
Yeah.
Now
I think that Facebook does a pretty fair job most of the time. Like, if you go and look at their fact-checkers, they're generally pretty neutral. Not always, but for the most part.
Yeah.
But now Twitter, they're just like, they're flat out there like, hey, we're going to go get our guys from...
I tell you what, why don't we start fact-checking Planned Parenthood? And let's see, who can we get to do that? Satan, maybe? Maybe we just let Satan fact-check Planned Parenthood. That'd be okay. I mean, I'm just... Going back to Saturday Night Live. What does that S stand for, Superman? Satan, maybe? I loved Dana Carvey as church lady. All right, so President Donald Trump. Hannah's done. We've lost Hannah.
My mind wasn't in the game the whole day. I've done so good. Last 5 minutes, I'm done.
She's good.
Fried. Actually, I retract that. I survived the last 2 hours.
President Donald Trump accused Twitter of election interference after it added fact-checking labels on his Twitter post for the first time on Tuesday. Okay, if you're going to do this for Donald Trump, fine. Are you going to do it for the DNC?
Yep.
Are you going to do it for Joe Biden? Are you going to fact-check every time Joe Biden says something really stupid and it gets put out on Twitter? Are you going to come back and, oh, this is really dumb. Joe Biden said this. It's not true.
500 million people have been killed in the United States from guns.
From guns. Yeah.
Well,
you want to fact check that for me? Is that going to happen? I don't think so. Twitter is now interfering in the 2020 presidential election, Trump wrote late Tuesday on Twitter. They're saying my statement on mail-in ballots, which will lead to massive corruption and fraud, is incorrect based on fact-checking by fake news, CNN, and the Amazon Washington Post. Okay, now I'm, as much as I thought those last tweets were just dumb, this is good stuff. I mean, I'm perfectly fine with this. Because he's right on, he's spot on about this. Mm-hmm. On Tuesday morning, the president posted on Twitter a message expressing concern about mail-in ballots, saying that such a practice, if widespread, would lead to fraud and a rigged election. Now, let me just read what Twitter said. Twitter later added warning labels to Trump's post reading, "Get the facts about mail-in ballots." The linked labels led to a Twitter article with a headline that reads, "Trump makes unsubstantiated claim that mail-in ballots will lead to voter fraud." The message under the headline reads, "On Tuesday, President Trump made a series of claims about potential voter fraud after California Governor Gavin Newsom announced an effort to expand mail-in voting in California during the COVID-19 pandemic. These claims are unsubstantiated, according to CNN, the Washington Post, and others. Experts say mail-in ballots are very rarely linked to voter fraud." Experts, can you give me, if you're going to say experts, I want to know who they are.
Which experts?
Who do they work for? What are their credentials? Why are they experts?
Who's paying them money?
Trump falsely claimed that mail-in ballots would lead to a rigged election. However, who are the fact checkers? Say that there's no evidence that mail-in ballots are linked to voter fraud. Did you go down to the DNC and just pick six guys that were involved in ballot harvesting in the last election and say, come down here and fact check for me? Is that where this came from? Really? Look, it is absolutely Twitter bias on the part of Twitter. If they do this, if they start doing stuff like this for everybody, then everybody will get off Twitter. If they do it for President Trump alone, that is Twitter interfering in the election. Because if they're, I mean, every politician, everybody running for office says stuff and exaggerates stuff to make points against their political opponents. It doesn't make it right, but everybody does it. So Twitter's going to have to do this for everybody if they're going to be anything other than just a hack for the Democrat Party and for Joe Biden. All right. Have a great day. That's all the time we got for today. We'll be back tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock. Ready and raring to go. Check out our podcast at the iTunes Store and other platforms. It's free.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Talk, His Radio Network, or the Radio Training Network.